Coming up, a former heroin addict gets into a situation where he has to invent for himself, on his own, the rules and procedures of being a doctor. That's in a minute from Chicago Public Radio and Public Radio International when our program continues. American Life from Ira Glass. Each week on our show, we choose a theme, bring you a variety of different kinds of stories on that theme. Today's show, Sink or Swim. We have stories of people who put themselves into situations that they are completely unprepared for. We've arrived at Act 2 of our show. Act 2, I'm not a doctor, but I play one at the Holiday Inn. Back in the 60s, a heavy drug user, a hippie, named Howard Lotsoff tried a powerful hallucinogen named ibogaine. Glatzoff apparently had one of the most intense drug experiences of his life. And when it was done, the odd thing was he had absolutely no desire to ever use drugs again. Just wasn't interested. He stayed clean. And years later, he decided that ibogaine should be used to cure drug addicts. And so he tested and got patents for several different dosages of ibogaine. But for a variety of reasons, it never got picked up by any of your mainstream drug companies. But ibogaine hung around on the margins. This drug that could supposedly do the impossible, especially for heroin addicts. You take it, go on this intense trip, and at the end of that trip, you have no withdrawal symptoms. None. Nothing. And you also have no desire to ever do heroin again. Well, this brings us to our story, which was put together by Lou Olkowski and Trey Kay. Lou narrates.
At his worst, Dimitri was living in his parents' basement in Detroit. He'd been using heroin for 27 years. His wife had died. Many of his friends had died. And he was edging towards 40. That was when it finally hit him that it was time to do something. In 2002, Dimitri went to Amsterdam for an experimental ibogaine treatment. It was given to him by a woman who cared for drug users out of her thatched roof farmhouse, surrounded by her 5 kids. 30 hours after taking the drug, Dimitri was cured of his heroin addiction, literally cured of his 27-year-old habit. He remembers waking up at the crack of dawn 3 days later, and experiencing a sensation that he hadn't felt in years. Joy.
I have never felt that good in my life. Didn't need heroin. I was completely exhausted. And I was just, I just kept on saying, praise God over and over and over again. And one of the little girls, I can't remember which daughter it was, she said, we had a black man from the Bronx, and he kept saying the same thing. You know, praise God, man. Praise God.
Dimitri says a lot of people come out of ibogaine treatments feeling euphoric, almost evangelical. And Dimitri became a kind of ibogaine convert, determined to take the good news about this miracle drug that had instantly cured him to other junkies. He knew tons of people back in the States that needed help, and as far as Dimitri was concerned, they weren't treated well by the traditional medical establishment.
I mean, my girlfriend works in a hospital. She comes back and tells me these stories, and I've seen it. I've been in a hospital when I was an active user and fought with doctors for friends of mine. I had a friend of mine sent home with spinal meningitis and aspirin because they didn't believe it. And he turned out to be HIV positive, too. And, you know, I took him in a second time, and I got in a big fight with this doctor who started moralizing, you know. So, you know, God only gives you 3 chances, you know. Not only is he an MD, but he knows how many chances God gives you.
And so Dimitri decided to become an ibogaine provider himself, to save his friends, just like the woman in Amsterdam had saved him. There were only 2 problems with this otherwise laudable goal. First of all, because ibogaine is a hallucinogen, it's illegal in the U.S. It's a Schedule I drug, like heroin, and if Dimitri was caught buying or selling ibogaine, he could go to prison for the rest of his life. The second problem was that by giving people Ibogaine, Dmitri was basically doing the job of a doctor or nurse without being either. Dmitri was a small-time rock star, bike messenger, dishwasher. He hadn't even taken a first aid course, and Ibogaine is a potentially dangerous psychotropic. So for guidance, Dmitri hooked up with other underground Ibogaine providers, former junkies like Dmitri, who over several decades had developed a kind of ad hoc collection of protocols about dosage and care. And the first time he gave a treatment, it went okay. But with the second guy, a drug dealer who helped Dmitri find Ibogaine and who actually referred addicts to him for treatment, it didn't go so smoothly.
So we go through the process. He gets done with it, basically. Okay, this is my second treatment. And then he goes into a seizure. You know, eyes rolling back his head, foaming at the mouth, biting his tongue. A seizure. It was unbelievable. I thought he was dead. Long story short, I was freaked. And actually, at that point, I panicked. I didn't know what to do. This guy's gonna die, and what the hell am I doing? You know, and this guy's gonna die. And, yeah, what business do I have to do this?
Dmitri managed to get the guy to a hospital, where he eventually recovered. But this was the first time Dmitri realized exactly what he'd gotten himself into. How crazy it was to be flying without a net, doing a job that put other people's lives into his hands. And this is the issue. Dmitri knows what it's like to be a junkie, to be desperate, frantic, to quit. And he believes that since he has what he thinks is a cure, despite the risk, it's his moral responsibility, his obligation, really, to help.
It's terrifying, man. You know, and especially, you spend time with these people, you get to know people. God, you don't want them to die. You don't want them to be hurt in any way.
Because Dmitri doesn't want his clients to be hurt in any way, he tries to be as much like a professional clinic as a former junkie with a by-the-seat-of-your-pants operation can be. He says he's even cobbled together a set of rules, more or less through trial and error. For example, clients should be clean of drugs and alcohol for a certain amount of time before a treatment. They should get EKGs if possible, and liver panels. And so just like he's had to invent nearly everything else about this job, he's had to invent boundaries for himself. Boundaries that are hard to maintain with everyone.
They ring my doorbell, call me up, and then I had a guy threatening to shoot me 2 weeks ago who went on a relapse, and this is like a real close guy, man. He wanted to kill me.
Having a client threaten to shoot you probably wouldn't be accepted in the world of professional medicine. But Dmitri sees addicts differently than most people do. He loves them. I interviewed him for a total of 35 hours over 7 months, and here's how he described every single addict he knows.
He's a brilliant guy. He's a beautiful guy. He's a great guy. He's a musician. He's a writer. He's an incredibly sweet man. He's such a great guy. He's got great taste in music. He's read some great books. He's funny. He's strange. I like him, man. I really like him.
One of the people Dmitri talks about this way, one of his clients, is Jimmy. Jimmy's middle-aged, clean-cut, working class, the kind of guy you'd see working at the post office or sitting next to you on a bus. He's clearly, genuinely a sweet guy. But if you hang around with him long enough, you feel the dark cloud that follows him around. I talked to Jimmy a few days before Dmitri was going to give him an Ibogaine treatment, and he told me he'd tried to shake heroin many times before. He'd done traditional rehab and a whole array of alternative treatments. He even tried Ibogaine once before with another underground provider. According to Jimmy, Ibogaine pretty much worked the first time around. He says after the treatment, he felt no craving for heroin. The thing that made him relapse was the dark cloud. All the other problems in his life.
Somewhere around 3 or 4 months when I started feeling a little bit lonely again, and, you know, it's like, why isn't anything really happening? I mean, I'm feeling all these feelings, but what's really changing in my life? You know? I remember Eric was talking about a guy had taken Ibogaine, and a few months later he met a girl, he got married, and, you know. So I'm like, well, when is this going to happen for me? It's like, and then I started getting to feel like, you know, maybe I'm just the same old person, you know, and there is no cure, you know.
It's see where this knucklehead is.
I'm standing on a street corner in the rain in midtown Manhattan with Dimitri. It's 5 p.m., the time Jimmy's supposed to show for his treatment, but he's late. Dimitri is not happy. Just the week before, he was waiting for a client in the exact same spot, and the guy never showed. It's not unusual. The flake factor is an occupational hazard when your entire client base is heroin addicts. But it still gets to Dimitri, who's always nervous and tense before treatment.
I'm getting hives, which is normal. See? It's all over my legs and my feet. I get hives every treatment.
Finally, 3 hours later, 3 hours, Jimmy arrives.
There he is. He is Jimmy! Jimmy!
We drive up and open the car door for Jimmy.
Get the in the car!
Sorry for putting you through all that crap, but...
What, did you forget that you're going to take a stronger African hallucinogen today because I slipped your mind?
Yeah, I just crashed because I was, up all night.
Okay. Oh, well, at least you got some sleep.
And then Dimitri begins the underground provider equivalent of an intake survey.
You been hydrating yourself today?
Yeah, sort of.
When's the last time you used?
Thursday.
What time?
7, maybe 8.
Okay. How many bags were you doing at the end?
It really depended on how much money I had. I tried to hold a bundle for the whole week, and I ended up doing the whole bundle and the whole thing one day. I can't hold on to it. That sucks.
As I listen to this exchange, it's hard to tell if Dimitri is getting any useful information. It's also casual. Basically, Dimitri and Jimmy just joke around until we get to the hotel in New Jersey, a comfortable chain where Dimitri has instructed Jimmy to book an economy suite with a small bedroom and a separate living space with cable TV. While Jimmy hangs out, Dimitri puts away some groceries and preps the room.
We'll set up a bucket for him to puke in. We want to make the room as dark as possible. Good thing it's starting at night.
Dimitri is careful to make everything as comfortable as possible for Jimmy. He even turns around the LCD alarm clock because he knows people are really sensitive to light when they're on Ibogaine. Then he takes out about 20 capsules containing varying amounts of Ibogaine. He lays the pills on the desk and tries to figure out how much to give Jimmy.
All right. What do we do? Do about a 16. That's too much.
Can you say what you're doing?
I want to give my desk a dose of 16 milligrams per kilogram. I'm just trying to combine the pills so they add up to that. Yep, that's right. Okay. You ready, buddy?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Jimmy strips down to his underpants and crawls into bed before taking the dose. His job is to lay there, as still as possible, in this dark room and let the drug take effect. Dimitri's job is to wait on the other side of the door in case anything goes wrong. After 2 hours, Dimitri goes in to check on his patient. Jimmy doesn't acknowledge we're there until Dimitri asks how he's doing. He opens his eyes and looks around, but just like a newborn baby, his eyes don't really focus on anything.
It's really intense.
It's really intense?
Yeah.
Okay. You throw up a little bit? Did you throw up a little bit?
Yeah.
You're doing fine, though, bro. You're doing really good. You want to get a towel for you?
Huh?
You want a towel?
No.
Okay, buddy. Okay.
The treatment takes about 30 hours and is, at least for Dimitri and me, uneventful. We watch a lot of TV. Dimitri checks in on Jimmy and cleans him up when he throws up. Jimmy just lies there having visions. Not sleeping, but not fully coherent either. Dimitri seems worried when Jimmy's finished with the treatment. Jimmy isn't euphoric the way people usually are. Instead, he's kind of depressed and agitated. And after chatting a little bit, Jimmy reveals that he'd been doing coke the night before.
I was getting high the night before, and coke and all,
Oh, you did coke the night before?
Yeah. I was smoking crack.
Smoking crack. All right, let me tell you something. Don't smoke crack the night before.
Actually, Friday, when you called me up, I was smoking crack. When you called me, asked me where I was.
At 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
Now remember that when we picked Jimmy up, he told Dimitri he'd been clean since Thursday, the day before the treatment.
So you were smoking crack all night?
Yeah.
So you didn't get any sleep?
No, I was smoking crack all from
Thursday. So really, basically you haven't slept since Thursday morning. It's Sunday evening.
Right.
So, like, yeah, so you had, kind of had that crack Ibogaine combo a little bit.
And not only that, I was doing benzos and methadone, too.
Oh, really? For how long?
For about 2 weeks.
Anything else? But I mean, right now, it doesn't really matter. Just for my amusement.
No, no. Okay.
You were like sniffing shoe polish or anything like that? No? No, no, no blue? Okay.
Dmitri was joking, but later when I talked to him, he copped to the fact that mixing all those drugs was a really bad idea. Something horrible could have happened.
And so the risk would be, like, heart attack?
What? I don't know. Be honest with you, I don't know. And I just, you know, maybe I should know that, but I don't.
When I went home, I called the doctor who does Ibogaine treatments at a licensed clinic in Cancun, Mexico. He told me that because Jimmy had taken benzodiazepine, there was a serious risk of seizure and potentially death. Which brings us back to Dimitri's constant dilemma. He knows he's doing a really risky job. He can't control everything, and the stakes are very high. And when I raise this with him, he suddenly seems sad.
I probably don't have a lot of business doing it in a certain sense, you know? But there's nobody else doing it.
And that, it seems, is the heart of it. No one else is doing it. So far, everything's worked out okay for Dmitri. No one has been killed or hurt on his watch. In fact, he feels he's helped many people. And he likes doing this work.
The actual work is basically touching people, cleaning people, nurturing people, holding people up, soothing their fears, being stern when they need someone, some direction, you know, during the actual, you know, and being really patient and quiet. Yeah, it's not about, it really, it's not about me.
The job is to love these people, he says. But sometimes that's really hard. There are just so many addicts with so many problems.
Okay, this guy's got a probation officer, and he needs to do this, this, and this, but he doesn't have a house, and this other guy's homeless, too, and she's got, like, all these abandonment issues, and then this one can't really get it because to get off the psych meds, you know, would be too much, and on and on and on. You know, all these people with really sad, hard lives. And I struggle, you know, I think about, like, you know, what am I really doing? How important is it? You know, and I think about that a lot. But like I said, I think I've said this many times. This is what I can do, okay? This little thing, you know, this little thing.
Dmitri just hopes doing that one little thing is enough.
Lou Wilkowski, she reported the story with Trey Kaye.